Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Third hour, what's happening? Tiki and Tierney, the good old Tiki and Tierney show, coming from our studios here, Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you want to see your loan options and adjust payments and closing costs online in real time, Rocket Ken. We're back on the tube tomorrow, which is cool. You away for soccer for the past few days, but I've been doing our thing here on all the great affiliates, which we're always on, 150 plus around the country. You know we appreciate you on Twitter, obviously, streams, and of course, radio.com, Apple iTunes, youtube.com/Tiki and Tierney. You know, Tiki, the fickle nature of the way we perceive sporting icons, both in the playing sense, but obviously also in the coaching and managerial sense, right? I want to point out something about Dave Roberts. And, you know, the point that I made earlier, and nobody really vehemently disagreed that Clayton Kershaw was an all-timer before this championship was punctuated. But now, you know, you have all those lines, the MVP, the multiple Cy Youngs, blah, 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 five-time ERA champ, et cetera, et cetera. A World Series champion, in the eyes of some, will now catapult him where I believe he rightfully belonged anyway, you know, top 10, 12 pitcher of all time. And some modern names that are on that list for me, you know, without going back to the black and white pictures, Pedro's there for me, Seaver's there for me, Greg Maddux is there for me, Randy Johnson, and Roger Clemens. And that's where it ends as I comprise my all-time pitching list. But about Dave Roberts, right? Think about the narrative with Dave Roberts before he gets his first World Series championship. Dave Roberts was on the brink of getting fired. If they don't win this World Series, he really might get fired. And if they don't want to fire him in the aftermath of a pandemic season, then he'd be fired next year if they didn't win the World Series. And suddenly you go from that to, well, wow, look at Dave Roberts. Back in 2019, he won 106 games. Wow. Back in 2017, he won 104 games. He's got three pennants. He's a World Series champion. He goes from a guy who was almost on the firing squad line to he's another World Series away from being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, no, it's crazy how winning a championship can just change your perspective on somebody. And again, it is unfair because he has been such a good skip. You know what I mean? You don't win 100-plus games and get to the World Series as often as he did with the right, like, attitude, the right demeanor. Like, he's a professional skip, man. You feel it, you see it. But when you keep falling short, you get there and you keep falling short, then obviously there's something wrong. And now he's erased that. It will never be a conversation point with Dave Roberts anymore about not being able to win the big one. Not dissimilar to Clayton Kershaw, because it was kind of the same thing. Now, the greatness of Clayton Kershaw wasn't up for debate. The postseason issues were up for debate, but the greatness of Clayton Kershaw wasn't up for debate like the greatness of Dave Roberts was up for debate, because he, as a manager, you got to win, you know, for, as a player, you can mask it by being elite. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Winning Cy Young's, doing the things in the regular season that we always talk about. Mm-hmm. But as a manager, you better win the big one. Otherwise, there's always going to be that thought that you just couldn't pull through.
Well, you say you can mask it, but I would challenge you, and I would say it depends on the sport. James Harden can't mask it.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about baseball.
No, I know, but I'm saying that there's a huge difference, just to point that out.
If James Harden ends up winning, yeah, you're probably right, because basketball is an individual game, even though it is a team game. It's a two-person game. I look at it's like if you have two guys, then you should be able to win a championship type of thing. Whereas baseball, you could be one of the greatest players of all time. Like top two or three even, and never get a chance to win a World Series. Look at in the NFL, it's the same way. Dan Marino is one of the best players to ever play the position. He's certainly the best in his era at quarterback. He played in one championship. It's so much about all the other like teammates. And
circumstances.
And circumstances in other sports other than basketball. Basketball, if you are like the man, you better win a championship.
Yes, the only problem with the circumstances, they get blurry and they eventually evaporate over time. Like, you know, a guy, the players who had their championship blocked by Jordan, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just Ewing, it's Reggie Miller as well, a few others too, Barkley. I mean, for those of us who are still around to say it in years, it will be said. But, you know, the circumstances of the pursuit will get, you know, old mm-hmm. and gray and withered away.
Yeah, they blend in. They're not important.
Yeah. Did you win? Did you lose? Even like with Marino, you know, think about this. Like he had a couple of great wide receivers, but, you know, never really had a great running attack, never had a great defense. Like, you almost forget about that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a shame because the circumstances are paramount and highly influential on the outcome. And, you know, even as a manager, I mean, think about this. Joe Torre was a middling manager for a long time. Mm-hmm. He was a broadcaster, matter of fact. You know, he had a little revitalization with the Cardinals, but with the Mets, they were terrible. He lost 100 games pretty much every year. Nice renaissance with the Braves in the early 80s. Tiki's team growing up with Dale Murphy and that crew. And they went, I think it was 13 straight games to start. The 82 season, they were a good team. They didn't win it. And then, you know, when Joe Torre is hired, the back page of the Post says, Clueless Joe. Clueless Joe, when he's introduced as the manager of the Yankees, the guy goes on to win 96, 98, 99, 2000. However, the circumstances, let's not forget, 1996, home run to right field, Jeter, Tony Tarasco, you know, Jeffrey Mayer reaches over. If Jeffrey Mayer doesn't reach over, Tony Tarasco's catching that ball. Who the hell knows if the Yankees win? So the way Joe Torre's perceived is so different. It's really, you know, the laziness to me. Let me get a Santer. What does he hit me up with? Okay, so the one thing that's, as I'm reading our Slack channel, Santer, and it's a good point, Santer wanted to see Kershaw silences critics more emphatically, as did I. The difference between me and Mike is that I realized that in the year 2020, you are less in control of the circumstances than you were. Like in 1980, you know, if Tommy Lasorda comes out to take out, I don't know, I don't even know if Fernando could speak English. I'm not trying to be funny there. I really don't know if he did speak great English, more Mexican. I don't know. But like you take Bert Hooten, I don't know, anybody from the 70s or 81. And Bert Hooten's got a better chance to win that Tommy John, better chance to win that Skip, I'm good, than, you know, Blake Snell, who's got no chance to win because it's already predetermined. So Santer's point, and we could get into this a little bit here, is that, you know, some of the great pitchers of all time, Randy Johnson, great postseason moments, Greg Maddux, not that many, actually, mm-hmm. Pedro, some good, some really bad, by the way, Kirk Gibson, October Beast, Roger Clemens, some really good, some really bad. It's kind of a mixed bag. Like, I feel like you just lump it all. Not all the all-time greats were October Demons.
No.
They just weren't.
And I don't think they need to be. And I mean, if you're looking for that emphatic moment for to justify Clayton Kershaw's greatness, then I'm sorry.
I know. What do you want me to say?
Like, exactly. Clayton Kershaw, and I think we have the sound on this, you know, talking about what it means to win the, you know, win a championship. It was, I mean, that's what it's all about to him. He doesn't care if he silenced his postseason critics. I mean, why would he? He's got a championship ring, and it was part of. He was part of a great team that should have, you know, probably won more. Maybe they will win more. Who knows? But that accomplishment you can never, ever, ever, ever take away from him, and that's really all that matters.
I've been saying, you know, World Series champs in my head over and over again, just to see if it'll sink in, and. I can't put it into words yet. I'm just so, so very thankful to be a part of this group of guys.
And that's what matters. You know what I mean? It was the narrative that we want to talk about with Clayton Kershaw. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, who cares? He's got a ring right now.
But I think he cared up until last night. I think he took that to the mound with him, Deke.
I don't think cared is the right word. I think he was aware of it. No.
He cared.
Because
he cared.
But BT, you know this. You go out and you play a game and you do it the best you can. It's not like he's out there, you know, messing up on purpose.
But I'm not an all-time great. Like, for me, I can't compartmentalize that. If he was I really disagree. I'm not saying that it affected his performance necessarily, but to think that he wasn't so motivated to change the direction of that energy, that negative energy toward his legacy. I think it drove him.
Yeah,
I really do.
So what changed this year from previous
years? No, nothing changed. I believe he really now can exult and exhale in the accomplishment. Now it loosens him up. I believe that it was...
been loose. I think he was just managed better. Like, so let's not forget that there were moments. Like, Clayton Kershaw, as much as people want to bash him about his postseason failures... Even with those postseason failures, with his accomplishments, he's still one of the greatest postseason pitchers of all time. You know what I mean? Think about what I'm saying. Even with his failures, you put him right there next to his accomplishments. Mm-hmm. He's still one of the greatest postseason pitchers of all time, right? And now,
maybe one of the all not postseason, one of the all time best.
Yeah,
pitchers
well, all time, all time best pitchers of all time. Yep, but he's had some great postseason moments also,
for sure.
Right? He's got he's got 10 games of giving up one run, in victory. There's Clemens and Maddux and not Maddux, Clemens and Smoltz. I forget the other two that he's tied with. It's seventh of all time with that number.
Is it Koufax? Probably Koufax.
Might be Koufax, but he's done some epic things.
That's
in
right.
The postseason. He's just never won a ring, and he's had some epic failures. And so when I talk about how he's managed, this is an idea. This was the idea that people have been putting out there for years. You know that he struggles once he gets to six or seven. Pull him, right? Don't let the gut, you know, your gut or his influence sway you. Do as Dave Roberts did this year. When he gets to that inning, you feel like he's been a couple times through the rotation. Even if his stuff looks good, trust the team, right? Trust the team that's behind him in the bullpen and let them carry his legacy for him. And that's what they did this year.
See, I disagree with that too. I don't think, and I can't prove this, but I did say it after game one. I think that because listen, in game one, he had A-plus stuff. I talked about his whiff rate, 50%, mm-hmm. all-time best number of anybody ever. I mean, what Clayton Kershaw brought out to the mound in game one was frighteningly nasty, filthy stuff. The problem was they put up a couple of crooked numbers late, and it was easy to pull him. I think, again, I can't prove this, but I believe the reason Dave Roberts pulled him was in case he needed extra bullets down the road, like a game seven. Say if they were playing tonight, all right? Kershaw pitched a couple of nights ago. Mm-hmm. You telling me he can't come in and get a lefty out in a big moment?
Yeah, of course he can.
So that's what I'm saying. But if he threw 112 pitches in game one, maybe he can't. Well, and when you're up a bunch of runs, pull him.
And that's about managing your pitcher.
But not protecting him because of past failures. There's a big difference there.
I don't think you can discount that, though. You can't tell me that Dave Roberts is not thinking about previous history. Just like you can't tell me that Kevin Cash is not thinking about previous history. You know, as great as Blake Snell you know, was this season. He pitched like three times past the sixth inning in the last 2 years. You know what I mean? So it's just not what they do. It's not what Blake Snell has done.
Well, it's not what the Rays do. The Dodgers, he'll let Walker Buehler go.
But I'm talking about
it's not a philosophy for the Dodgers.
It's not a philosophy, but it's also what history has told you is going to likely happen. When Blake Snell goes past the sixth inning, you know what his ERA is? 13.25.
You know what Clayton Kershaw did the first round against the Brewers? He had 13 strikeouts in 8 innings in the playoffs.
Great. That's the Brewers.
Why didn't you pull him?
That's the Brewers.
He usually implodes.
That's the Brewers. That's the Brewers.
Brewers have better hitters than the Rays. They do. Trust me, they do. They do.
Not if they're striking out 13 times.
Maybe a little more swing and miss, but a greater propensity to put a few in the seats. Listen, the bottom line is...
And if you got a swing and miss team that's going up against a guy who's got the same, you know, arm angle for three different pitches, you're going to swing and miss a lot against Clayton Kershaw. The Rays aren't... Even though they had a horrendous World Series. What was the collective average? 220? I think it was actually worse than that, BT.
They didn't hit, man.
They didn't hit anything. Except for Rosarena. He was the beast.
God, he is amazing. I really am curious. Like, and they said it on the broadcast last night. Smoltz was like, so does this mean he's pretty much the best player going into next season? Like, you really don't know how to process.
I know
his skill set.
He's a rookie.
Of course.
It's nuts, man.
His skill. I got to look at his minor league. Say, as you I got to look at his minor league numbers a little bit here.
But you're right. Like, the one guy from the Rays who you trust going into next season to.
I trust Lau a lot.
But even though Lau went through a bad slump and he kind of got out of it for a game. I would trust him as well. But with, you know, we talked about this earlier at the top of the show, BT, the Rays are the losing team. They're not going to, like, they'll be a part of the conversation for a day, maybe two, but then it's going to be all about the Dodgers if you're talking, you know, baseball in the World Series. But they have a future because they have a great skip, as we know, who manages bullpens really well. And they have a couple of bats that you can look at and say, this kid, in Rosarena is a star, and he's young, and they have control over him for a while now. So there's stuff to build around with the Rays, even though it sucks that they get washed out in the sixth game of the World Series, the closest they've gotten to win a World Series in their history, and they've only been twice.
Yep, obviously 2008, we've referenced that a few times. He had some big years in the by the way, he is 25, and the one thing about the Cuban defectors, I'm not trying to be cute, you never really know exactly how old they are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, he could be 26 or 27.
Yeah.
Not doesn't mitigate, I don't care if you're 40 years old and you're doing this in the World Series. What you did was insane.
I didn't realize he was that old.
He's 25, man.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
He hit .396 2 years ago for AA in the Texas League, which I believe is Florida State's definitely a pitcher's league. I think Texas is more of a hitter's league. .396, that was with the Cardinals. He hit .309 last year there, 24-year-old, 24. He had some bombs. Hit .358 for Memphis, which obviously is the Cardinals' AAA affiliate. And he showed some real power, too. 64 games, 12 home runs. He ran a little bit, although he gets thrown out a lot. He's got good speed, but he's not a great high-rate stolen base guy. The point is that they might not get back for a long time. And just like when they were there in 08 with David Price and Evan Longoria and all these other guys, you know, because Madden is the skipper. You know, they might not get back, and when they do, Rosarena might be 40, and, you know, Charlie Morton going to be long retired, and all these guys are gone. That's why you stick. I know it goes against their philosophy, but you've got to be adaptable and modify it to the moment and the situation and the person, and that's why I believe they had a colossal gaffe last night.
Yep.
And just to finish the thought up on Clayton Kershaw, Teague, it's not like he's 37 or 38, and he's only 32.
I know. It feels like he's been around for so long.
Because he was one of the best of all time right away. He was that great right away.
And he's been in the postseason a lot.
That's a great point. So we've seen him for not just the customary 162. We've seen him in high leverage. No doubt. And we've talked about his struggles, so he's been on the radar. He's, you know, multiple Cy Youngs. That's true. I think that, you know, I mean, he's got 170-something wins. Can he make a run for 300? Who knows how the back holds up? Probably not. But he's got the third highest winning percentage of all time. He wins 70% of his games, and now he's got something nobody could take away. And I'm just really happy for the guy because it punctuates an amazing all-time iconic career.
Agreed.
All right. Coming up here on Tiki and Tierney, Hey, we got to talk a little college football here. Yeah. Coach Satake from BYU. They are undefeated. They're in the top 10. It is a weird season. Can they actually maybe join a Clemson or a Ohio State or any of these top teams? Maybe. Bama, of course. We'll talk to him. Coming up next, a little BYU football. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Take one thing we do on the show, we take great pride in illuminating great stories. Stories that might not be the first click on the banner on a web page or the back page of a newspaper. They're still newspapers, right? But this story deserves some real attention. BYU is rolling. They've played six times. They've won six times. They're beating the tar out of teams, putting up a lot of points. And with this interesting year, as they're nestled inside the top 10, you never know. So we're joined now by their coach, Kalani Satake, who played himself. And he has the program at a spot they haven't been since 2008. Coach, welcome to Tiki and Tierney. How are you doing today?
Gentlemen, thank you for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. You know, I referenced the numbers, you know, whether it's Navy, Troy, La Tech, you know, San Antonio, Houston, Texas State most recently. You know, I always try to piece together, you know, in a coach's, the way you view the team, the last couple of years, with all due respect, rather pedestrian, you know, 7 wins, 6 losses. Was this an expected pop based on the maturation of the roster? Did you think as you came into the 2020 season that things were aligned the way they've gone so far?
Well, we knew we had something special on this team, and because of the guys that were returning, the number of experienced players, we had a high number of injuries the last couple of years and had to play some young guys, and then we made it a conscious effort to get more young guys in the game and open competitions up, and when you do that, you have to play the best, and a lot of our best players were underclassmen, and so those guys playing in addition with the injuries and other guys getting their opportunities caused a lot of healthy guys to be back in competition, and competition breeds success. And we're seeing a deep team, a team that we feel comfortable with, a high number of players in a lot of different position groups. And I think that, you know, they've earned our trust, and I think they're loving each other and enjoying the game. And more than anything, with the pandemic going on, they're just have a high sense of gratitude and appreciation to play the game.
Yeah, and Coach, you mentioned that pandemic, and we've all been dealing with it, but how has your team approached it? Because there's so much that can go wrong on college campuses and on grounds, and we've seen this across the country with these outbreaks. How is your team handling all the protocols, being responsible, making sure that they're all available for each other come each and every weekend?
I've been really impressed with the way our administration, our university, our staff, and more importantly, our players, their attitude towards everything. And I think high level of appreciation, you know, it rocked the football world, but it rocked everybody's world. That's how it did. It disrupted so many things, so many lives. And so the fact that we were able to still play football and train for football, we were in middle of camp not knowing who was on our schedule or didn't even have a first opponent. And the guys just took the field and practiced and enjoyed being out on the field with each other. You know, the pandemic caused our players to focus on things that they've taken for granted before, and maybe even human interaction and eye-to-eye contact and conversations. Mm. And now I'm seeing them live a different and a better life and not taking anything for granted and utilizing all the time that they have. And that even means the time with their loved ones and the time with their friends and the time that they get to play this football, the game of football that they love so much. And I don't think they're going to take that for granted. I think it's been one of the positive things as a result of the pandemic, and I hope they continue to have that humble approach to life and enjoy the fact that they get to play a game that they love and represent their families on the field.
So we're talking to Kalani Satake, head coach, BYU, and coach took over back in 2016, and, you know, your fingerprints at this point, coach, obviously all over the program. You've got 4 games to go. Boise State's always tough. You finish up with the Aztecs of San Diego State. And trust me, you know, whenever it comes up, whether it's the NFL, whether it's the NBA, the World Series, I get it. Guys who played, guys who coach, one day at a time. I understand, coach. But indulge us for a moment, because Tiki and I just had this conversation yesterday. We look up at the AP poll, Clemson, got it. Bama, got it. Ohio State, understood. And then things get a little nebulous. You know, Cincinnati's in the top 10. You guys are in the top 10. Coach, a lot of people listen to the show, and I know you're a humble man, but we need you to stake a little claim in the turf why BYU should have a shot, if you handle business the rest of the way, to play for a championship this year. Let's hear it, Coach.
Well, I think you're going to hear coaches speak for me, because that's how I truly feel about the game, about football, is that you put all your effort into what's in front of you at the moment right now, and that's Western Kentucky for us, and learning from the mistakes and the issues that we've had, and the negative part in turning them into positives from last week in the Texas State game. So, I think that discussion is more for the fans and for you guys and the experts that can go into it, but I feel like the most important thing to do to respect this game and show great sportsmanship is to focus on the task at hand, and that's playing this Saturday against Western Kentucky, giving them everything that we got. We know they're going to give us their best shot. Tyson Helton does a great job coaching his program, and so that's what it's going to come down to. I'm sorry for the boring answer, but
Coach, that's cool.
Yeah,
I get it. Let me just follow up here, thing, because I understand. Let's take it away from BYU, Coach. How about this? And in general, broad terms, do you believe that there is a path for a non-Power 5 to get there?
I don't. Again, that's not. I think as long as people are talking about you, that's good, mm-hmm. and that's all I can focus on. Our main focus is just playing the game week to week and living the day to day, and mm-hmm. that's it. And sorry to be so boring, but that's honestly how I feel. But you know, it feels good to be talked about, but I got to keep these guys focused on what we're trying to get done. And we've been in places where we haven't played our best. And when we can play our best, we can live with the results. And so far this year, we've felt like we've played at our best most of the time. And now we're hoping to do it again, you know, for the seventh game this year. And that's all we're focused on.
Kalani Sitake, BYU, 6-0, and Coach is with us here on Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
You know, Coach, you talk about, you know, getting it done each and every week, and tell us a little bit about your quarterback, Zach Wilson, and how he's made what looks like a precipitous jump from, at least statistically, obviously nationally we see it on the highlight reels, but 16 touchdowns on the season. He's almost completing 80% of his passes. He's only got one interception, which is a huge jump from the numbers from last year, where he was about 50-50, 11-9 touchdown interception ratio. What specifically has evolved, changed, you know, grown within him to become such a great playmaker? He's in the conversation for the Heisman Trophy early on in this season. What's changed with your quarterback, Zach Wilson?
Well, the thing that's been consistent is what we can count on, and that's hard work and his approach to the game, and that's from his family. It's not anything that I did as a coach, you know. He came here, and we liked him because of the things that we saw from him off the field and how it was able to carry over onto the field. And you know, when he started for us as a true freshman, he had to develop a little bit and learn and understand the scheme, and things are clicking for him. But he had some health issues. He had to get healthy, and we all knew that the skill was there. But the one thing that you can count on, that he's going to work really hard. I mean, that guy is someone that doesn't ever settle, and so he's never pleased with whatever happened. After we play a great game, he's always in there checking the things that he wish he would have had back, and play throws that he wish he had could do differently, and that's carried off over to the team. That the fact that he's our leader, and the players, you know, they feed off of him, has generated this type of mindset, and it goes in line with the culture that we have with this team. And I think everyone's loving the result right now, but that young man has worked really hard, and he's just like a lot of the other young men on this team, and it's just nice to see all his hard work pay off.
Yeah. Are you guys thinking about branding Zach to Dax? Because, I mean, that connection has been one of the more exciting ones every single weekend.
Well, that's been fun. I mean, those guys, they've known each other since they're, you know, kids, and so roommates and everything. But he has that connection with a lot of different receivers and a lot of guys on this team, even guys on the defensive side. It's just nice to see your quarterback hanging out with the D lineman, hanging out with everyone, and just, the kickers feel like they're part of this team too. So that's just unique, and I love the way the players just love each other, and a lot of that has to do with the upperclassmen showing the way and being great examples. So it's been a lot of fun. But you look at, I think Dax gets a lot of attention, but, Zach's spreading the wealth. He's divvying out the ball to the right people and making great decisions. And I can really trust him on the field, taking care of the football, and his decision-making process is unbelievable.
That's a good start. You got the quarterback. You've got the coach. I know you'll deflect that compliment, but you don't have to. 6-0 start, first time BYU's been there since 2008. Their head coach, Kalani Sitake. We're watching, and you're right, we're talking about you. So don't worry. Anytime there's the conversation about you-know-what, coach, we'll make sure we get you back a little bit. Thanks for hopping on, man.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for the love.
There you go. Good stuff with the BYU coach. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We got to get a little love for the Bearcats coming up pretty soon while they remain undefeated, Teak. I think we weave them in at some point, right?
Yeah, of course. Especially if they keep winning. They had a big test against SMU. They passed it.
Crushed them.
Now they go forward and see if they can be one of those teams that's in the conversation, just like BYU.
We're watching and we're following for sure. All right, coming up after Axe Update, Bo knows this, Bo knows that, Bo knows everything. Bo's no sneaker, bowling, archery, Bo knows it all. He knows tackling, too. How about what the legendary former running back said about what he'd do today? A little hyperbolic, but actually, is it? We'll debate that. The Blast is next after Axe Update, which is right now. Here's Rich. All right, still going to get to the Blast here on Tiki and Tierney. First up, though, time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day. Brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. And this one coming in from Harry down in Florida. And Harry says, do you think the Rays will be contending for the title moving forward? Or will they fall apart like so many other small market, low payroll teams? I do not believe they will fall apart. They will, in all probability, lose Charlie Morton, who's seriously considering retirement, and he is good. You got the 2018 Cy Young winner in Blake Snell. He's wrapped up. I think he got a four-year deal. You've got a Rosarena. You've got Brandon Lau. You've got some pieces. Their farm system's good. They're good at what they're good at, and that's good enough to be good, I think, for another couple of years for sure.
Yeah, I don't think they're falling apart at all. Now, are they going to be, you know, the best team in the American League and get back to the World Series on a yearly basis? Probably not, but I don't think they're going to fall to a 20-game below 500 type of team.
Well, they're not going to become the Orioles.
Yeah, exactly right. They're not going to go from decent to horrible.
Like no way. No, not happening. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. All your car care needs, guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Teak, you ready to blast away? See what we got today?
Yep, let's do it.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, former top 10 pick Eli Apple, who was drafted by the Giants and bounced around. He's been released by the Panthers after being active for just a couple of games. And in 4-plus seasons, he's been with 3 teams. Will Apple get a chance with a 4th team, Teak?
Yeah, I think he will, and it'll only be because of circumstances around this season. He's in shape because obviously he was on a roster already this year, and we don't know what's going to happen with any team, you know, with the coronavirus. And so I could definitely see him getting signed to somebody's either practice squad or active roster. Will he ever develop into a star? No, but I think he'll get signed somewhere.
I mean, what's his problem? Is it technique? Is it attitude? What's the deal with him?
I don't know. I just don't think he was that good. I think he was covered up by all the talent that, you know, 5 years ago at Ohio State on the defensive side of the ball. And the Giants got fooled. I mean, it's a bad draft pick.
That was a bad one. He'll probably get a shot given his position. He's still relatively young, so he'll get a shot. But, you know, in terms of being a player of significant consequence, no, that's not going to happen. Bo Jackson was chatting up with Dion Prime Time. It was on his 21st in Prime podcast. And Bo said, quote, if I played during this era, man, I'd be putting up 350 to 400 yards a game. Nobody wraps up anymore. They run into each other with their pads, end quote. What do we think about Jackson's comments? Well, obviously hyperbolic. Nobody's going to average 350 yards a game. He'd be Derrick Henry, although a tick faster, and Derrick Henry's fast.
Yeah.
He'd be, you know, he would be. Listen, whatever he was when he played at his apex, he'd be better today.
Yeah.
He'd be better.
Look, he's right. One of the reasons that Derrick Henry is so effective as a runner is that no one wraps him up. Now, that might be because he's so massive. He's 240 pounds. When you're coming downhill to tackle him, what do you do? You don't hit him high. You can't hit him low. If you try to fundamentally tackle him, like, you know, head to the side, wrap your arms around. He's just strong enough to run through it. So without gang tackling, the only chance you have is to kind of try to knock his legs out from underneath them. But he runs through a lot of those. Bo's not wrong here, but I think he'd be great in today's game because he was powerful and fast and just game-changing with his change of direction and speed.
Zeke, what would he be catching the football today? I don't remember his hands.
I don't think he had a bunch. I don't think he did it a lot, but he'd be just like Derrick Henry. You're right. Derrick Henry doesn't catch the ball a lot, but he can. You want to throw him a screen pass and get him out on the perimeter like he did in overtime, you know, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, that's valuable.
So an old running back to a current running back, Penn State running back Noah Kane, done for the season. Undisclosed injury, meaning three of the Nittany Lions' top four running backs from last year are unavailable. Yikes. Mm. I mean, it's almost strange to say, can Penn State still make some noise in the Big Ten? They just lost to Indiana. But we'll ask the question, can they make any noise? My answer is a definitive no.
Yeah,
do you disagree?
Yeah, I don't see it. And look, some of this BT is about their their running back situation, but it's also just, I mean, we talked about James Franklin, you know, earlier this week, BT, and the decisions, like did he have his team ready to play? They didn't really look like it against Indiana, especially early in the game. They came back, took a lead, but then they lost it for some bad decisions. You know, ultimately, is their quarterback good enough? And Sean Clifford, I like the kid. He's actually better of a runner, so maybe that mitigates the loss of their running backs a little bit. But they're not going to make noise this year, unfortunately. They have Ohio State this weekend. It could get ugly. But no, the answer is no.
You want to make noise, make noise. Like the Gotti boys. All right. Per reports, the Hawks are shopping the sixth pick this year. The draft is coming up in a month with the intent of landing talent that can help them reach the playoffs next season. So they're making a little move. What do the Hawks need to do to take that next step? Well, first of all, I mean, there's the draft aspect, and then there's the Hawks aspect. I don't know why that number six pick would be appealing to anybody.
I was getting ready to say, who you trade it to.
Yeah, it's not a good draft. I mean, listen, there's always a few hidden gems. Donovan Mitchell went 11th. I understand that. Jokic, wasn't Jokic, I think, a second rounder?
Yeah, true.
You know, you never know, but still, that seems a bit ambitious to jump into the sixth slot when nobody is, or very few players are givens. The Hawks, to me, what needs to change? I feel like they just need a little veteran presence, maybe more than a little. I mean, that's not like that's all they need because they were not good at all last year. They need a little more efficiency and a little more veteran know-how, and that's a good starting point.
Yeah, look, they don't need scorers, and I think they don't necessarily need defenders. They need, you know, they need like a Chris Paul to come in there and teach them how to win, in a sense. Now, could that potentially be a trade? Yeah, it could be. It'd be interesting, you know, for Chris's legacy because of what he did at Oklahoma City last year. But I mean, I'm just looking at the prospect board, BT.
Yeah.
It's the Mellow Ball. It's Killian Hayes, who's French, obviously.
Guard,
yep, the guard. And then, you know, James Wiseman and Anthony Edwards. Just Obi Toppin's there.
Obi Toppin.
There's just not a ton of, like, names that I'm looking at saying, that dude's going to be a star.
Nope.
Right?
Absolutely.
That guy is guaranteed.
Well, the kid from Israel, I like.
Yeah, Denny Avdija.
I always mess his name up, but yeah. I've been watching a lot of video. He looks, I mean, again, you never know, but
Avdija.
He looks good.
Denny Avdija.
There you go. And he's got the length. He's got a little latitude. He's got a little bounce. He can pass. He can handle. He can shoot. This is an uninspiring draft. Listen, if there's ever a draft to have in November, this is probably the draft.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Cole Anthony, who we thought was going to be a superstar, he's like all the way down projected in like the 20s, man.
Yeah, he has. You want to talk about a plummet? He has just dropped. He can't shoot.
Yep.
He doesn't shoot efficiently, and he's a shoot-first point guard.
Yeah.
That's problematic. If the percentage is good, that's fine. But and they didn't have a lot around them. There are a lot of people thinking to get him with better players, maybe, but you got to show a little more than that. I know he missed some time. I didn't like it at all when I saw him. Listen, if he's on the Knicks, I'm unhappy, unless he's their second pick. Anyway, at the introductory press conference, Pelicans head coach Stan Van Gundy was asked how he would use Zion Williamson. He said, quote, "I don't look at him in any way as far as he being a four or a five. I'm not sure those labels matter when it comes to him," end quote. Does Zion need to define and find a defined position? for him and the Pelicans to succeed?
I don't think so, BT. I think he needs to. He needs to. Like, we're positionless mostly, anyways. It's going to be who he's going to be able to defend, and I think that's going to define his career. You know, offensively, he's going to score. He's going to jump. He's going to be above the rim kind of guy. He'll develop his stroke from range, whether that's mid range or from the three pointer. But it's really going to be about what kind of defender is he? Willing defender is he? And given his size or lack thereof, can he be a post defender? And I don't know. And if he's not going to be a post defender, then he's got to get a lot slimmer, a lot more agile to keep up with some of these wings that are so versatile in the NBA.
The only thing that there's two things that matter, at least for the next year or so with him, and that is keeping his body tight.
Healthy, yeah.
Keeping
you're right.
His joints healthy and right and loose and spry. And every year, adding a little more confidence with that jump shot and stepping out a little deeper and really learning how to be a passer. Because when, they'll be good this year, but when he maxes out, and they're where Pelican fans hope they'll be, and they're vying for championships, if they're in that position, it will be because he's one of the top three or four players in the game. And when you command that kind of attention, you can't be a decent passer. You've got to be a great, willing passer. And if he can really... And I think the tools are there for him. I think he sees the court pretty well. Mm-hmm. So if he could keep streamlining that skill... It's easy to say, well, he's got to shoot. But I think he's got to be... Which is fair. But he's got to be a good passer and make guys around him better. And I think that he can.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
You know, Teague, by the way, even though it's locally, it's the same family, how about we give some congratulations and massive props to one of the great guys in our business, Joe Beningo, who announced today he's going to retire after 25 years locally on The Fan. Joe was a caller to the overnights. You know him well. I know him well. We actually all have the same agent. Joe is one of the really good guys, honest people. And he's had a great career, and that guy's going to be missed.
Yeah, no, he definitely will. I love Joe. He's an unfortunate Jet fan like you, BT. Yeah. But, my career started with Joe Beningo. When I first got into media, not just radio, but TV, but media in general, it was because Mark Chernoff gave me a shot overnights with Joe, talking hockey and nonsense that I didn't know nothing about. but it made it work, and he treated me right and taught me, some of the ins and outs of the game. And here I am, 22 years later. It's crazy it is. We're colleagues. Obviously, we're on the national side. WFAN is local in New York. But congrats to Joe on an unbelievable, very unique career. And hit him straight, as BT said in his social media post, because we know he loves to play golf.
He does, and he plays a lot of, military golf, a little left, a little right, like who doesn't? But, he is one of the most unique, has a unique career from where he came to where he finished. God bless Joe. We love you, pal. We'll catch you all tomorrow. It's going to be a great Thursday show. Week 8 begins. Safe, sensible, sane. Peace. We'll see you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.